This is Kelly Lally, and I'm here in Glasgow, Kentucky with Mr. H.B. Jackson. Today is July the 9th, 1987. When were you born, Mr. Jackson?
July the 7th, 1918.
1918?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you grow up?
Allen County.
Allen County? What's the closest town around that way?
Scottsville.
What did your family do for a living?
They were farmers.
What kind of farmers?
Just a regular farmer, tobacco, corn, and that's about all you could grow in Allen County.
How many people were you in your family?
Three brothers, two brothers.
And where did you fall in that line? Which number were you?
First? I was the oldest.
What were times like for your family during the Depression?
They were pretty rough. There wasn't any work available at all. Farm products, you couldn't sell. You had to just about produce your own food.
How did you hear about the CCC?
Well, that was in the early days of President Roosevelt, and everybody knew. I can't say exactly how I heard.
How were people selected for the CCC in the Allen County area?
Really, I can't tell you how they were selected. It seems like there possibly been one from a family or something like that at the time. I'm not even sure that's a fact, but it seems like I remember something like that.
Did you know of anybody who wasn't able to go into the CCC who wasn't accepted?
Not to my knowledge, no.
When did you enter the CCC?
July the 8th, 1935.
And how old were you?
17.
And how long did you stay in?
The camp that I was in was abandoned on or before 1940. I just can't say exactly. I don't know. It could have been late part of 39, or it could have been up in 40.
It was in 40. That was after Charles was born.
You all were already married? Which camp were you in?
Camp number 4, Company 516.
So you were married before you went into the CCC or during?
No, during.
Okay. Do you remember how you felt when you left home for the CCC?
Well, pretty well. I was glad to have a job. I considered it a job in those days. Something to do, training, and whatever they had. Because at that age, you didn't know what you were going to find.
Did you get homesick at all?
No, I didn't.
Did they send you any place for training before you went to Mammoth Cave, or did they do the training there?
They did the training there.
Was it a certain period of time? Do you remember anything about that training period or conditioning period?
When you first entered as a rookie? I can remember the first 6 months working with the forestry crew. See, they had different crews, maintenance of road building, operate the quarry, communications, building telephone lines, things like that. And this forestry group was where they worked to help prevent forest fires and things like that. They would cut the timber, put it laid across ways of the hill, and whatever type of terrain you were on. And I guess about the first 6 months I was with that, and then I started working in the kitchen. And training, I don't know whether it was called trainees or what. And the rest of my time was spent there as a second cook, first cook, and whoever you didn't have. Another thing I can't remember was when I first went in, I don't think you could stay with 6 months. That's hard to explain. I was there, what, 5 years, I guess, when it was then. But I know there was a limit on it. I guess they had a cadre that would keep them and open and close the company. Well, seems to me like they kept so many people, like, of course, the company commander. You have usually a first lieutenant and a second lieutenant. Some of them might be a captain. And then a first sergeant, a mess sergeant, first cook, and supply sergeant, and company clerk. I would say are the ones that open and close the company. Now, what I mean by closing, new enrollees. Seems like a full company was 240 men. That sound right?
Somewhere in the 200s range. How are you paid? Do you work with the CCC?
To start?
Uh-huh.
Well, to start with, you got $5 a month. Spend any way you wanted to. Anytime.
And the rest went home?
25 was sent home, yeah. And then after you work so long, I can't remember the ratings. I believe it was referred to as leaders and assistant leaders. It may have been that. But they did have a stripe for your sleeve of your shirt a little bit. You could have been assistant leader. I worked up to all of $45 a month after a while. And in the 30s, $45 a month was a little bit more money. I can't really compare it with today, but that's the way it was.
How did you spend your personal money, your personal $5?
Well, Cave City, you can imagine, especially when there was four companies over there, Cave City, the population then probably was 1,200, I don't remember. So, 600 to 800 men in Cave City on Saturday night, and it was a wet town in those days. So there was a lot of ways you could spend your money.
You say first you were in the forest learning about the trees.
Yeah, I remember. They might send you on different jobs. Now, at the time, I have worked a little bit on a fire tower, but it wouldn't have been very long. That's reporting fire.
Well, tell me about your job as learning to be a cook and the different positions that you held.
As a cook?
Uh-huh.
Well, as a cook, you had older cooks that had done, you learned from them, really. And it seems to me like that in later years, we trained a few people as cooks there. So you were working, really, you were working for the Army, like I was working as a cook. And at 8 o'clock in the morning, the men were turned over to the ECW, Emergency Conservation Work. And then they were back that night, back to the Army. We would refer to it as that, or the company did. ECW, what did I say, Emergency Conservation Work. And, back to your question of how you train. So a lot of times some of the cooks would leave within 6 months. I remember there was a couple of us that didn't. We was there for several years, one on each ship. And it wasn't long, after a few years, we could train the cooks. I can't remember if we shipped them out to other areas or not. Seems like we might have been sent to Fort Knox occasionally. And another thing I can't remember, the 5th Corps area, I believe at that time, was Columbus, Ohio. And I'm not too sure of what Fort Knox was, Camp Knox, in those days. Does that sound right?
Oh, I haven't heard that, but that's a possibility.
I don't know how long it's been a fort.
I don't know either.
Maybe, like you say, we're talking about 50 years, there was something about Columbus, Ohio, because I remember taking a physical once for, we were going to take 5 men from the 5th Corps area in the Merchant Marines. And I failed the test because of the physical, because it was 5 pounds on the weight. That's how close it was. And that's why I remember the 5th Corps area.
So you started out as a second cook, is it?
Well, yeah, you'd start as a second. Well, you start as a helper.
Helper. And
you start as a helper, you make a second cook, and then you make a first cook. Of course, it didn't take a genius to make a first cook. But you had to know how to cook, though. We had good food. We had wonderful food. But you learn in there, well, over the years, during all that time, at certain times, you'd have to act as mess sergeant and everything else, and may have been mess sergeant for a while. You didn't, it was still the days, not like it is now. You were just glad you had a job. If they wanted you to run a garbage truck, you'd have done it and wouldn't said a word. And I remember, well, I had enough, I learned enough in there about menus and things like that and handling the food. When World War II come along and was drafted in the Army, I didn't volunteer, I was drafted in the Army. And I was sent into a specialist company on account of that in the Army. And I was a mess sergeant in an officer's club in Fort McClellan, Alabama. And I was never moved. It was because of that. Because in those days in World War II, like if you were a teacher or something, everybody was drafted in the Army. It was all, as you know, it was all a profession. And we had professional cooks in there. Well, even though you had a professional chef, I remember we had one on one chef from the Palmer House and one from the Waldorf Astoria. They were out of this world, but they didn't know anything about writing menus and ordering supplies. We had a professional baker. And if it hadn't been for that work over there, I'd have been, I don't know where I would have been. You wouldn't have been put in an officer's club as a mess sergeant.
Oh, no.
So but and it wasn't because they couldn't get other cooks. If you take a professional in a Waldorf, he might just handle meats, vegetables. But handling the whole ball of wax is a little different.
Well, tell me the difference between what the helper did, what the second cook did, and what the first cook did.
On the shift?
And the CCC.
Yeah. Well, a helper would help prepare, let's say you had potatoes. That day. You're talking about 7,500 pound potatoes, 200 men. You might say, of course you have peelers. But you might assign that to them to have that have it prepared and work with the KPs to clean it up. You know, around there, you lost your stripes if you didn't have 180 degree water. And things had to be sanitary and cleaned it up. Shift run from 12 to 12. You changed at noon. Each day. I don't mean you worked all night, but you did start at 3 o'clock in the morning. All right. And you didn't always have helpers. Maybe if you had one in training, it was like maybe a cook or something. But you served, a lot of times we served meals out in the field. We served meals in Mammoth Cave. If you would have a rain and have high water or something back over river up in the cave, they take men in there to clean those trails and everything, and we would go in there at noon to serve lunch. Maybe spend the afternoon waiting for them to come out.
What did the first cook do then? The first cook
was responsible for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The meals and how they were prepared, everything else like that.
Yeah. How many cooks did each camp have total, or people working with the food?
Well, the food? Well, I'd say you're setting up a company like that, you need two first cooks, two second cooks, and a baker. And the KPs. KPs was full maybe alphabetically. And maybe you didn't do your job too well, and you got KP this weekend, see? And something like that. That's the way KPs are. So they wasn't too enthused about their work.
Yeah. Did you alternate shifts, or did you have a set shift? You know, someone took the early one and some took the late one.
Well, it's all the same. See, if you go off at 12 today, in other words, you come on at 12, I would serve the meal today. But you start preparing your night meal. And then for your breakfast the next morning, in the morning, noon, as soon as you serve the lunch, you go off. Shifts. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the baker did his work at night. Yeah. Now, I don't mean he baked bread. We had contracts from different, like in those days of Honeycrust and Bond, people like that out of Louisville. And you buy bread, but we baked different types of pies. And then the first cook and the mess sergeant had to be in a position that if something happened to the baker, you could bake. I'm no expert baker, but they could eat it.
So when you had to take meals out to the field, did you have people who served as servers who took everything out? Like you cooked it at the camp and then somebody else took it out, or did you go out with them?
Well, now you could send a heifer or something to serve. But occasionally you might go yourself. I've gone in the cave a lot of times. Of course, you kind of like to do that in the summertime because it's 58 degrees down there. It just all depends how much help you have.
So how long did you spend at each position as helper, second cook, and first cook? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. That would be pretty hard for me to come up with. I'd say after 6 months. And after 6 months, I was working in the kitchen most of the time. But you do other assignments if they come up, if they needed to send you someplace or that kind of thing. It's not like it is today. I'm a cook. I don't do that, or I'm a supply sergeant. Whatever task come up, you were willing and able to go.
You also were in charge of supplies, food supplies of some sort, or?
The mess sergeant. So you were like, you know, he'd write the menus as he was there, and of course if he wasn't around, you'd write them yourself. You had to know that. And then he'd order the supplies. If I remember correctly, we were allowed 33 and a third cents a day per man to order those supplies for 30 days. Now, 33 and a third cents a day, you're thinking of it at your age, you starved to death. But you didn't. The ones that came in there were underweight, gained weight with our menus, and the ones that was overweight lost weight. Well, that just about happened, because we didn't have to jog to get exercise.
Yeah.
And the food, I'm not going to say it's the best prepared in the world, but it wasn't work. But it was a balanced diet. You talk about who ordered the food. If I remember right, 240 men, you'd order about 2,000 pound potatoes a month. And we didn't just serve potatoes, but you'd advertise the beans, cabbage, and your meat. And then we'd get a lot of that out of Fort Knox. In fact, we'd go up there to the commissary. But you couldn't. I might mix a little of that up with Army. Now, you take an Army, an officer's mess. I buy all contract stuff from Swift and Armor and people like that. I might mix that up a little, but it's still about the same principle.
Well, what makes a good menu? What would you put together for a good meal?
Well, you're talking about the night or what?
Yeah, I'll just say an evening meal.
An evening meal? Mm-hmm. You want something special? Well, in there, now that many men, you couldn't serve a T-bone steak. Now you could have been officer's cook. But a good evening's meal would be a choice beef roast with vegetable gravy. You know what I mean, vegetable gravy? Not flour and meal and grease. Your carrots and everything grated and put in there and you grate it with mashed potatoes, buttered peas, coleslaw, a Boston cream pie for dessert, an individual. That's a pretty fair meal. Beef stew can be made. You could have beef stew if you use the right kind of meat. You can come back to your beef stew, so you got most of your vegetables in your beef stew, but you don't have to have all the potatoes and everything with you. Sunday night, of course, was a cold cut night. Don't mention corned beef to me today. Your lunches was a real problem. If you was going out in the field and going to be out for quite a while, now what I mean all day, that was a job of the heat, because you had to watch what you other words, you could fix peanut butter and cheese, and tomorrow, cheese and peanut butter. Because seriously, that's why I can't hardly eat cheese today. What are you gonna fix if you don't have refrigeration? You had to have something to eat. So it was meals like that, or sandwiches. Because you sure wouldn't want mayonnaise on a sandwich out in the hot sun. I guess that was about as tough as anything to come up with.
You all probably had lots of special dinners around Christmas or Easter holidays or celebrations.
Mm-hmm. That was a good day. That was a good time for the cooks. I can remember turkeys. We just about always had turkey Thanksgiving, Christmas. We really had turkey and ham. There wasn't anything short of it. Dressing. We even had oyster dressing from time to time.
The one man that I talked to, Hobart Vincent, gave me, he had kept some menus of what.
Did he?
Uh-huh. I made some copies of them.
I wish I'd have kept a lot of them, but I didn't.
Yeah, maybe I'll send you the copies of the menus.
I think I've got one of her books here, American Menu Maker, that we use for a recipe.
So are you still, do you cook a lot now?
No. During the World War II, I got back to where I could cook some, but since then I haven't cooked. Oh, I could still cook. When I want something real good, you know, I fix it.
He's still a good cook.
Well, can you describe a typical day for you, then, as cook?
A typical day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a typical day, the night guard would wake you at 3 o'clock. If you had something unusual, it might be 2:30. So you were in there preparing breakfast. You talk about a meal.
Mm-hmm.
You were preparing your breakfast. It could have been scrambled eggs and bacon, and hash brown, probably with gravy. And toast. Now you didn't do much bacon or biscuit in a place like that. Coffee, which I've done mentioned, pretty good breakfast. And then you could come back or have a cream gravy with beef on toast. And of course now hash browns and what's the other potato for breakfast? Hash brown. There's another one you can have, isn't there? And the restaurant.
Home fried.
Home fried, yeah. Hash brown and home fried. One of the two, of course, they're about the same. And really, I think that was pretty good.
So were you preparing?
At the same time, though, you were preparing, depending on what you had. Let's say you had a roast beef, and depends on the size and thickness, you might be lining that up for your breakfast. I mean, for your noon meal.
While you're doing breakfast,
while you're doing breakfast, yeah. If you had stew, I'm not talking too long on something.
No, I was just making sure the tape wasn't going to run out.
Stew or something like that, it don't take too long. But I'm a real believer. I've had it with our with a company where I retired, with our home economist. I've had some good discussions over. I'm a believer in preparing food slowly. It's fast cooking, not for me. And you know, make it as tasty. Use natural juices. Well, Brian, we had some good cooks in there. Of course, I wasn't one of them, but they had some good ones.
How much free time did you have?
Well, I had from like noon today to noon tomorrow. And then if you wanted a little longer weekend or something, if you and I were, you might want one next week. I'd work for you this afternoon. You might not have to come in the week. I'll work for you tomorrow morning.
What did you do with your free time?
Well, we had educational programs. I tried to take advantage of life. For example, somebody like Joe Caliza could correct me on some of this stuff. Seems like we could take typing for 50 cents a month. Did anybody ever mention that to you?
They didn't mention the cost. They would mention some of the classes, though.
Yeah, we'd take typing and woodworking. I remember taking some typing. I don't know what for. I didn't go there, but it wasn't. I kind of know the keys, that's about all. By the way, if anybody ever asks you, Joe Caliza can type 100 words a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Faster than any man I know. In fact, he's a very intelligent person.
Oh, yeah.
And, there was a lot of projects that you could learn.
Did you take part in any of the organized recreation?
Oh, yeah. We had a tennis court, a nice tennis court. We had a baseball team. One company would play the other. We had some pretty good players in there, baseball. And I don't think we ever played basketball. Didn't have a gym or anything like that. Well, there's all types of recreations, from horseshoes to wrestling matches, exercising programs. Not that you need them, but people want to develop muscle. You know, there's always a kid wanting to develop the muscle. Of course, there's a lot of that I can't even remember.
Did many of the CCC boys play pranks on each other?
Oh, yeah. That would get pretty bad.
Do you remember any of them?
Oh, yeah. The old thing was short shooting people. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Especially on a cold night. And then hear the pretty rich remarks. See, there was pretty... I was always in the fourth section. I was number four barracks. You'd have to call them down if they got too loud, because after all, there's about, 40 people sleeping. You wake up everybody else. Some people go to bed early. The lights go out at 9 o'clock. That's when you turn in. That's great. This is like anything else. If you couldn't take it, well, then you called for it. You was the butt of them. That's all there was to it.
Were there any pranks in the kitchen?
Oh, yeah. Pretty good. Well, you could have I remember one guy, every time he come through, you know, you wanted to be as nice as you could, but no matter what you was doing, he won't taste it, especially soup. See how it's going. You do your own tasting, you know. I remember one guy, I broke for that. I had some Tabasco sauce. You know what that is? And it worked perfect that day because I had tomato soup. I saw him coming. So I got me a teaspoon or maybe a tablespoon full of Tabasco sauce. Now, if you know what Tabasco sauce is, you try to swallow a tablespoon of it. I was standing there like I was good. Let me taste that. And I let him taste it. And he swallowed it. We had to help him outside. I was kind of scared. I thought, you know, he'd get strangled, take his breath, and we might lose him. But he didn't like me for a while.
Was there much interaction among the different CCC camps? You know, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Did you all interact with each other?
Like recreation?
Or in general, anything?
In general, you couldn't very well. That's the way I remember it. They might not all remember. They had a place over there, for example, that we called the Whoopie House. And they thought they'd, try to have dances and stuff. And it seems like I remember one where that they had two or three of the companies together, and by the time they got it all over with and home that night, they didn't try anymore. I was just a little drinking, getting out of line, and just a bunch of young kids just didn't want to get along. I'd say you could get schools. You might give an example if you put them together of what had happened. Say after a ball game. That you might compare it to. It wasn't a rougher place in the world, but it didn't work out.
So in general, they kept the camps fairly separate when it came to social.
Yeah. They would send trucks to different places. I remember going with two or three trucks one night, one Saturday afternoon night to the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. But I never did go no more because take some of the country boys, the time you get them back on the truck in the city of Nashville, after 12 o'clock, you wish you stayed home.
I'm going to turn the tape over before it runs out.
No association whatsoever. They work having their group, they worked to themselves. I just knew they were over there is about all I knew about.
Did the recreational teams play each other?
Yeah, no, we used to play in baseball. Couldn't beat them, though, but played them.
How did the local residents feel about the CCC being in the area?
Well, I'd say they were pretty good about it. There were some upset. About the time, I don't know how long the camp had been there. It hadn't been there a very short time. The first people came down from Martinsville, Indiana. You go into a place in a park like that, it's like buying right-of-ways. Once it's approved, the money to buy the set the park up and everything, you go in and appraise the property, and then if they don't accept it, like you know how it's handled from then on, the appraiser sets the price, a lot of people would be unhappy. And I'm sure I couldn't even name any. I wouldn't want to anyway. That were unhappy, but I know there was a few because we had a few farmers over there in the park at that time. We'd have to battle. They'd be in odd places, you know, hard to get to. So you talk about Smith Meredith. He was at his home. In the park when I was over there, that's as far as you could go down that road. If you'd gone on the other side, you'd have to go around through Brownsville and come back. So you get a fire over there in the right place and be all over the country before you get there.
Was it more the Park Service that people were unhappy with, or the CCC, do you think?
Well, I'd say the Park Service, because there were a lot of people. Smith was a local guy, and a lot of you've named two or three that live there. Like Caliza, he's from Indiana. But this, you named somebody else, I've heard of the name, but I didn't know him. They were local people, really, or in the general area.
Were there ever any problems in town, like when a whole bunch of CCC boys went in? Any tension between the residents at all, or did they usually welcome the business? I mentioned?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think you could take a group today and go in. It could even be girls, you know. They wouldn't welcome you, all of them. They'd just say, oh, somebody would think, well, there shouldn't be that many people here or something. But in general, I say it was accepted very well. Because of the economy. So you go into KC, I don't remember, say if there's a full strength, 240 people in four companies, that's quite a few people in a little town. They had two policemen over there. They're not living today. I got to know them real well because I lived in KC for a while. And I did a little police work after that too. You didn't have to read them their rights in those days. If somebody was acting up, you show them a nightstick, the next time you were using it, and you didn't have any problem. They wouldn't have it today if it was that way. And they would have carnivals, and in those days, carnival was a big thing. And you'd hear of a fight once in a while, but it didn't amount to much. In fact, if somebody started to get out of line, the CC boys would probably be trying to correct it before they got there. They would have helped them. I think, I'd say they were excellent to people. In KC and Brownsville, and of course those towns were small. It's hard to believe a little town like KC City was left in those days, but it was.
Did a lot of the men date local girls?
Oh yeah, sure they did.
Were there a lot of social activities, organized social activities with
You didn't hear too much of that in those days, not like it was in World War II. But now they attended a lot of them, go to local churches and things like that, and then some would invite them into their homes. And then you got other people who wouldn't invite anybody into their homes. It's just the way it goes.
Somebody told me a story about local girls setting fires to get the CCC boys out to their area.
Well, I'm sure that happened. I'm sure it did.
I think that's funny. I laughed so hard on that one.
Unless you had to fight that fire.
Yeah, well, I don't think it would have been funny, but I guess people will do anything.
There are a lot of pine trees back over there, and you get a fire of the wind in a pine tree, it's up here, you know, and you can't control that thing. And you get away. Some of them are rough.
Well, in general, how successful do you think the CCC was in relieving the effects of the Depression?
In relieving?
Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, I think it did a lot. Even it brought, you know, a little more money into the economy. Now you're thinking, well, start out $30 a month, you call that money? Well, it was in those days. I'd say $30 in, we're talking about $120 now. And it did a lot to places like Cave City, because there were a lot of people working there. Now, like Ellis Jones, you're talking about. Ellis Jones was he wasn't an enrollee like I would have been in Donnie, and they were hired as instructors. Because I remember, you remember back, I mentioned the forestry thing. That was Leslie Randall. I understand he might still be living. He was a forester, and I don't know what title that really is. What do you study to be a forester?
I guess sometimes there's forestry divisions.
Forestry divisions.
Yeah,
but he could tell you anything about the disease of a tree and what happened. And then you had, like, he was a mechanic, and then over the name of Kate. Well, it seemed like it was roads or communications. And like I said, road building. Like that road and that ferry all down there, that's built a road. That's where you learned to operate bulldozers, drag lines, what have you.
How did it, for your family, how did it make a difference? I know you probably got married somewhere in the middle of everything.
No, that's the problem there, yeah. That's it. I don't know if it made a difference. We went out of camp and shut down. We closed that one out over there. I was one of the last ones to leave, three or four of us. Like I said, either own or give or take a year there, 19 and 40. And, I went from there on the state police pretty soon there. But it was the state police those days. It was the highway patrol prior to the state police.
What do you consider to be the greatest contribution of the CCC?
To me or to everybody in general?
Both, you can tell me both.
Well, I'd say for what we're learning there, learning discipline. I've mentioned discipline a lot of times since we've been talking here. I believe in it. In other words, but if you won't listen to anybody or what they tell you, somebody that's had more experience or your instructors or your teachers, you never will get a place. And we've got so many people today, they don't want to listen to anybody. I don't know. I made too many interviews in the last 35 years before I retired from the company. People, you can almost tell in an interview who you've got. But I think the difference then, when a person entered over there, you knew what you had, how much money you was going to make, and everything. And you knew if you didn't make it, there was no other place to go. And I don't know what's easy to do. They come out with a pretty good attitude, all those young men.
Do you think it made a difference in the military for World War II?
I think so, yes. Yeah. They knew what. Because in World War II, they couldn't get by being as tough as they was. Now, in the Army, it's just like police, you know, reading your rights. In other words, if you stopped for anything, you got to read your rights just like you're a criminal. And that's why they can get by so much. But I'd say that it improved it 100% because I don't know how many officers I did know in the Army. If I'd have been smart enough to join the Army earlier, I knew enough officers from being over there that I could almost pick my place. But they wanted you. They wanted us. Why they knew me was on account of the kitchen. Not the kitchen, but the food in there.
Were there any big problems that at all you could see with the CCC in general or the camps at Mammoth Cave?
Were there
any administration problems at all?
No. We had a superintendent of the park, Homer Salisbury, he's deceased now. Fine person. And, like I say, that's all. But I'm almost positive our company's last one to go out of there. No, I can't. I just don't know.
What kind of interaction did the CCC have with the Park Service, or do they have any?
Well, you actually, CCC, you actually working for the Park Service. Now, in other words, remember I said, okay, you and I were working together and I was working with the food. Okay, I was actually working for the Army. And you could have been working for ECW, Emergency Conservation Work. You could have been anything from a clerk to a truck driver. So you were turned over to them at 8 o'clock in the morning and back at 5, whatever time you quit in the afternoon. And you were doing projects like I was told. I remember used to, they just don't tell how many thousands of pine trees they set over there. Well, that was for the Park Service. So
were there Park Service supervisors?
Oh, yeah. Well, like this guy Randall I mentioned, he'd have been supervising that work. That would have been for the Park Service. See, they were looking for work for you. I don't know what you call that. In other words, what we did over there, we had this rockway, and we could build roads, and they had the communications, telephone line, and stuff like that. I mentioned another. For example, when we first went over there, all the chestnut trees in about 1935 died from some kind of disease, like a worm. There's a long straight pole, like you see a lot of telephone lines now. I mean, telephone poles you see now right here. They went in and cut all those trees because they used to be used in those days for those lines and build a chrysalis plant, chrysalis those, take them out. They saved them, say. Of course, you don't do anything like that today. Now, there was a camp at the Elizabeth plant, and they worked on erosion. They helped farmers. Maybe you had, now I was never there, but I've seen this, and I don't know the extent of everything they've done. Let's say you had a farm, and there was a lot of gullies and stuff, a lot of erosion, just taking your land away, washing it away. They would go in there and help stop the erosion, things like that. Of course, they were all over the country. Now, out west, I don't know, they were even camps in Death Valley, California. I don't know exactly what they did. I was going to try to take the heat wrong.
So, what exactly did you do after you left the CCC? First you went into the Army.
Mm-hmm. No, let's see. After I left the CCC?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I worked at, I was living in Kansas City. And I worked at Hill Service for about, Hill Service was a filling station there. I only went up the stoplight there. I guess for about, well, let's just say 6 months. And then I went on Highway Patrol. That was the state police. We give, just like they do now, only they've got people that don't do nothing to give driver's tests. But those days, you give driver's tests, you patrol the highways, especially on weekend. We didn't even have radios that day. And, of course, you can look back at different things and know how the highways was. Crooked 31W. You imagine chasing a speeder, on that? Well, we did. And I guess I was on that for about 2.5 years. And drafted in the Army. And I ended up right away. Well, they were, as soon as you go in the Army, in the first place I went to Fort Benjamin, Harrison, Indiana, they always look at your record. Of course, when you're in the Army, you don't asked what you do. You do what, in those days, what you're told. And they're always looking, seemed like for cooks, especially. Of course, they were running like a kitchen there. It was running all night long because that war was hot there. And there were men coming in all the time, and women. Of course, there wasn't as many women in as there would be now. And they must open my record the first one. Because I wasn't there any time, they set me up there at 1 o'clock at night to run a French fryer with pork chops. I'll never forget that. Because you just serve one group after the other, and this train is going in and it's coming in. Then 2 or 3 days, I ended up Fort McClellan, Alabama. And about, and then they'd go through this record again a day. You'd either be assigned a 10 weeks or 12 weeks, I don't remember, training. That was the ROTC, infantry placement training center. And you would take so many weeks of that, or you'd go into a specialist company and take 4 or 5 weeks. They sent me into a specialist company. And they were real short of cooks out there. And it wasn't long, it didn't finish that, so they sent me into a specialist company as a cook. And about a month there, they sent me into headquarters, the ROTC. Headquarters company was a kitchen that almost ran like a civilian. It was two of us as mess sergeant, and it was that big. You had the officers and the training staff and inspectors out of Washington and stuff like that. Say you was an officer there. You could have a white card. That could have been for a noon meal. Or you could have had one a certain color for 3 meals. Or 2, whatever it might be. You could live off the post or on, whatever your case might be. And then if you brought any of your family in, if you was married, you paid for their meals. And that's where... Well, it's a little different now in cooking than those others. We did serve steak there. Exactly. From the time I was a mess sergeant there, all the stuff from Swift and the other armor and all that, you ordered it all. That's set up as a nonprofit organization. And to be a good mess sergeant there, what you have to be able to do is serve free beer once a week and enough to pay for a dance about once a month. Well, in those days there, it was like we were talking about cooks having, you had good musicians who were drafted now, and you get them out of the color outfit there, they'd play all night to just give them beer. So that was actually a play job, but I was never moved and never transferred, and it all leave. Sometimes it'd be with a new bunch. And you come in, and it was, it wasn't how well I'd done my job, it was, I'd had the experience. If I didn't have a breaker, I could fill in for him, I reckon. You know. Anyway, it kept me there. In the Army, they don't ask you if you want to stay. They keep you for lunch here where you need.
So you were there until?
I was there until about 46. In 1946, and then I was discharged. I had a leave of absence from the state police. The state police had made one trip to Frankfurt. And see, I didn't want that. I didn't tell them I wasn't going to take it, but there was a person who had been looking for me from Western Kentucky Gas. And he met the bus when we got on. How he knew he was coming in Bowling Green. She was living in Bowling Green. And I wanted to go to work for Western Kentucky Gas, and I did. I went to work here in Glasgow. For him. It was 1946, and I worked here for about 17 years, and I was district manager for about the last 15 years I was here, and they transferred me to Owensboro, which is our largest town in the country. And I retired there in 1981, so I had 35 years. I retired as a regional manager.
So you think the CCC made a difference in your life with discipline-wise? Is that the main?
If hadn't been with 3 C's, I'd never had the job. You know, most of the kids have just been smart of it. They learned.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about your experience with the CCC?
Mm-hmm. That's about it.
Well, then I'll turn off the tape recording.